Today on CityCast Houston, Mayor Whitmire has announced his new HPD independent panel to review how 264,000 cases were marked suspended. Plus, could Senator Ted Cruz really lose to Colin Allred? And Houston is once again the best in the nation. I'm breaking down the biggest stories from the week with Pulitzer Prize finalist Evan Mintz. It's Friday, March 15th. I'm Raheel Ramzanali, and here's what Houston's talking about. Evan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Isn't it nice to go around the city with limited traffic? Shout out to spring break. It's been nice. It's been good.
It's been so wonderful. The other day, I was freaking out. I was running late to get my kids to school because I send them to a Jewish preschool. So our spring break isn't until Passover. And I'm like, oh, we're going to be so late. There's no cars on the road. We're just zooming on by, getting them to school just in time. It was very nice.
Now, if we had that kind of traffic year round, I have a feeling it would be really expensive to live in the city of Houston because then everybody would be here, right? I went to Monday Night Raw at Toyota Center on Monday night, and it was just so easy going around downtown. Parking was simple. The traffic was nice. I just wish we had this all the time, right? Speaking of, you know, downtown Toyota Center, April 5th, just hold the date, okay? I'm just going to say that we might be having an event. Hold that date, April 5th, listeners. We've got something planned for you. I'll give more details when we can, but a little hold the date there for April 5th. All right, Evan, let's get to our biggest story of the week. Do you want to start us off?
Absolutely. The biggest story of this week, and this is going to lay the foundation for so much news coverage between now and November, is that Ted Cruz is telling his own team, his own supporters, that he has a real election ahead of him. He is telling his core fundraisers that he has a chance to lose in November. And I think that's astounding because you just kind of presume that, well, if you've got an R next to your name in Texas, you're going to win. But that's not the way it's going to go this November. Polling already shows that Colin Allred, the Democratic candidate, and Ted Cruz are tied. Colin Allred, who just won his Democratic primary, has more money on hand than Ted Cruz and raised more money in the most recent quarter. And right now, you've got Ted Cruz out there launching his 2022 campaign by trying to tout his bipartisan bona fides. He's listing various Democratic officials who endorse him, including Laredo's mayor and the Presidio County Sheriff. But I got to tell you, like Ted Cruz and bipartisan, I'm going to call BS right away. There's no way that anyone's going to see Ted Cruz as a bipartisan figure. Not at all. But it definitely stands out that this is how he's launching his 2022 campaign. In contrast to 2018, if you remember, the first thing he did was attack Beto O'Rourke as a liberal. And if it's not enough to say, well, my opponent is a liberal Democrat, and that means you win, it means that something is really changing in Texas politics.
Yeah, it was strange to see that Democrats for Cruz campaign ad roll out right after Super Tuesday. And it's like, yes, you handpicked five or six Democrats who are going to vote for you, right? But overwhelmingly, it seems like, no, Democrats do not like you, Ted Cruz. And that's because you spent the last 6 years just alienating everybody and making moves that really, it doesn't matter if it's an R or a D next to your name. It's just, you're not likable. And now all of a sudden, because it looks like it is going to be a close race, you're playing the, oh no, come on, everybody likes me. Democrats, we work together now. It's too late.
It's just unbelievable. And literally, I cannot believe it because the only thing Ted Cruz can point to as his accomplishment during his two terms in Congress is that he helped confirm the judges who overturned Roe v. Wade. You don't see his name on any major bills. You don't see him behind any critical efforts to support the region. John Cornyn's name is on some important bills. John Cornyn, to his credit, has gone to the mat for Texas and Houston to get us the things we needed after Hurricane Harvey. But Ted Cruz is out there recording a podcast and pushing books that he wrote and getting in Twitter fights. Like, he doesn't do anything for us. He's not just unliked by Democrats. Republicans don't like him either.
Allred, by the way, in his FEC filings show that he raised over $8.5 million. So this is going to be interesting. There's a lot of money backing him as well. Ted Cruz had just over $6.5 million. And look, those dollars are important in this race. And we're going to see a lot of ads. I've already started seeing a lot of ads for Allred on X. And his campaign is really pushing the fact that this is a close race. Mm-hmm. So literally everyone needs to get out and vote. So this is going to be a fascinating, fascinating buildup to November.
I'm curious to see whether this really turns into a serious race, because if you look at the national map, it looks like Democrats are going to lose some of their seats in the Senate and hand over the majority to Republicans. But if Texas is sort of the tip of the spear on this, this is going to make or break what the balance in Washington is. You know, if Democrats can win in Texas, it's going to mean huge change.
All right, Evan, my biggest story of the week, and it is by far the story of the year thus far, and it's how HPD handled all of those suspended cases starting back in 2016. So we know HPD and Mayor Whitmire have already allocated a lot of resources into looking at every single suspended case to make things right and restore faith in the justice system and in policing. And now Mayor Whitmire has created a 5-person independent panel to review just how HPD let this get so out of control with 264,000 cases getting suspended. Now, you can learn more about the entire panel in the show notes, but the reason I'm bringing this up, Evan, and this is a trend that I've noticed, and maybe it's just me, and maybe I'm not reading the right sources or I'm not watching the right newscasts, but how did HPD Chief Art Acevedo, the former chief, get away with this? And how come we don't hear his name in the criticism of all of this? He took over in 2016. Most of this started in 2016. And no one's talking about him.
That's a really good point. I mean, usually Art Acevedo is the first guy in front of the cameras. And I think there are questions to be asked about what happened under his tenure. But it also seems like that this practice was sort of a routine thing, that people were using this code to say, well, we don't have the manpower to push aside cases, where maybe there's another reason to put them aside. They didn't have the evidence. It was a repeat. Something else was going on. This was the easiest way to get rid of it. So that's why I'm really looking forward to having this independent committee to look into exactly what was going on. And I hope that we come out with not only more knowledge about what happened, but a good sense of what we should be doing going forward to make the highest and best use of the resources that we put into HPD. I mean, we have a $1 billion budget for policing. And so what are police doing with their time? Should they be spending their time better to investigate cases? How can we better utilize the overlapping law enforcement agencies like constables, like school police departments, like metro police department? There's a lot of stuff going on there. And I think there's a bigger question about how we ensure that all the resources we're putting into law enforcement are actually doing their jobs well.
Yeah, it is, you know, fascinating. Before we hear that, look, there's just not enough cops, there's not enough detectives out there, all that. But now, all of a sudden, when this bleep hits the fan, right? Mm-hmm. This gets out public. Now there's everyone working overtime. Everyone's doing everything they can to fix it and get things right. And you just go, man, what if we just had this before, right? And as you mentioned, that big budget, and Mayor Whitmire has already started talking about the fiscal year coming up, and there might be a 5% reduction in the budget across most departments, but guess where it's not going to hit? Police and fire. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, like, hey, if you're going to put this much money into it, then hopefully we get better results.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a bit of a side issue, but saying that you're going to balance the budget without touching the biggest parts of the budget, you know, it feels like a misleading claim. Like, you've got to look at the places where you're spending the most money. And this is where we spend the most money because it's an important job. It really is critical to maintain community safety. And we want to have that outside oversight of law enforcement to make sure they're actually doing their job well. You know, maybe this outside committee will lead to a bolstering of civilian overview of other law enforcement operations.
This is one that we're going to be watching out throughout the year, and there's going to be so many different layers still unraveling here with this. It is by far the biggest story of the year in the city, and that's something we'll keep an eye out here for the rest of the year as well as we learn more about it. Houston's original neighborhood downtown is for everyone, and it's poppin'. It's our open-hearted home for our biggest celebrations and our treasured hidden gems. From the world-class theater district to incredible green spaces like Discovery Green, downtown is the place to be. In fact, more people visited downtown Houston last year than the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio combined. There's no better time to live downtown than now. From starter apartments to luxury lofts, everyone can take take advantage of the arts, business, culture, entertainment, food, and recreation. Now, you might think of downtown as only the heartbeat of Houston's regional economy, which it is, but there's so much more to it, including free events throughout the week with Downtown Houston Plus. From the Market Square Park Farmers Market every Saturday to Yoga Flow every Wednesday, you can find something to do and eat and watch in downtown Houston. Learn more at downtownhouston.org. Downtown Houston, get energized and revived. All right, Evan, let's get to our most overlooked story. What do you got?
Most overlooked story is that Houston is getting $43.4 million from the federal government to add and improve sidewalks, flood infrastructure, and trees in Gulfton and Cashmere Gardens. No required local match, all for us. That is incredible. And I think this work is critical because I was just at a Baker Institute event on building safe streets for children last week, hearing experts point to the places in our city that had the most injuries and deaths for children. And there were big red marks all around Gulfton and all around Cashmere. They are hot spots for danger. And it's about time we built our streets with safety for children in mind rather than just speed for drivers. So I'm very excited to see this work getting done. But here's the overlooked part. The people who advocated for this are no longer at City Hall, as we've seen turnover between mayoral administrations. Veronica Davis, who is the deputy director in charge of transportation and drainage operations, she's out. David Fields, the city's chief transportation planner, he's out. Bill Kelly in government relations, he's out. And the bipartisan infrastructure law that funded all of this was opposed by Senators Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, even as the bill otherwise gained significant Republican support. Our big fans in D.C. who made this happen were Lizzie Fletcher and Sheila Jackson Lee, so shout out to them. But I hope that just because this wasn't a Mayor Whitmire program, that he doesn't treat it like something of a low priority. This is how you build public safety for everyone by making sure the streets are safe.
So now that the funding is there, what are the next steps?
They have to finalize the design for this, and then that has to get approval, and then starting construction. So the whole thing may not be done for another 2 years. And there's also going to be questions about whether the design means going on a road diet, taking out some lanes to put in some wider sidewalks, to put in medians, to put in bike paths. But those are the things that prioritize safety for people on their feet. Kids can't drive. And so when kids are trying to get to schools, to libraries, or just walk around their own neighborhoods, because we want kids outside and playing, we've got to make sure that we build neighborhoods for kids, not just the commuters who are zooming by.
Also, I saw this study this week that unsafe street conditions in Houston are not only resulting in fatalities and serious injuries among children, but they also are impacting kids' physical and mental health problems as well, right? I mean, this just makes so much sense that if you don't have safe streets to play on, you're just going to be inside the whole time and you're not going to be active, and that leads to more problems. So I just saw that one, and this is the perfect one to bring up to your story. So I've linked that entire story as well, which comes from Houston Public Media. So make sure you read that when you have some time in our show notes.
You know, one of the most important things to building healthy kids is ensuring that they have a sense of mastery over something, whether it's knowing how to play the piano or being good at a sport or anything. And if all you're doing is staying inside and the whole outside world seems so weird and foreign, it's hard to build that sense of mastery about the world around you. So we want to get kids outside. We want them interacting with each other, and we need safe streets to make that happen.
Amen. Okay, my most overlooked story. Look, things are getting more expensive, and we always talk about how it is getting a little bit more expensive to live here, but this is a reminder, Evan, that things aren't as bad as they could be in H-Town when compared to other cities. A new smart asset analysis found that you can live a comfortable life here with the lowest salaries. Now, a comfortable life is defined as your salary going 50% to needs, 30% on wants, and then 20% on paying debts. So a single earner in Houston, you just need to make $75,000 to live a comfortable life. And for a family of four, $175,000. I know those numbers are high and those sound like it's a lot of money. And I just want to put it into perspective here. In New York, you have to make $138,000 to live a comfortable life, and $318,000 for a family of four. What Oh my gosh. It is so crazy to hear those numbers when you hear what I just said about the city of Houston.
No, it is incredible how easy it is sort of with that first level job to get out there, find a place to live in Houston and live a chill life. And I feel like we live in an age of hedonism where, you know, if you subscribe to Netflix, if you subscribe to online streaming, you have access to so much television and so much media that just 10, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have had. You can plug in and have so much right in front of you. You can communicate with people around the world. Now, a lot of things that are very important in life are more expensive than ever. You know, healthcare is more expensive, education is more expensive, housing is more expensive. But once you kind of get those basic needs met, big screen TVs are cheaper than ever. You know, getting out to have incredible food is more accessible than ever. You don't have to travel the globe to get that high level of cuisine. It's right here in Houston. And so once you get your sort of foundation in life, there's so much fun to be had.
Absolutely, right? You think about the arts, you start thinking about the parks, the food, as you mentioned, entertainment. Look, we're a big city. We're a top city in the world, right? And we have all that. And the lowest salaries. You can survive here and live comfortable, which is nice, but still a lot of work left to be done in terms of everyone having that accessibility, right? Making sure that everyone can live a comfortable life here, because $75,000 for a single person, that is still high, right? When you look at everyone in the city, but it is good to see that we are still one of the best when it comes to affordability and living a comfortable life. All right, Evan, I know the traffic this week was our moment of joy, but let's bring something else to the table. What was your moment of joy for this week?
My moment of joy for this week was that I was included in the online developer shill bracket by Yimby Land, where they have a contest between all sorts of people who spend too much time on Twitter talking about how we need to build, baby build, and develop our way towards housing abundance. Now, I lost in the first round.
I know,
but you know, it was a good loss because I went up against Emily Hamilton, who had written a great report for the Mercatus Center about how Houston is affordable because we made it easy to build townhouses and build a lot of them. Now, I actually lived in a townhouse, so you know, I was doing the real thing, but I understand why she won. So congrats to you, Emily, and maybe next year I'll make it to the second round.
What was your seed?
My seed, I was in the seventh seed for the townhome region.
Oh, man. Look, it's a 7-10 matchup, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Hey, even in the NCAA tournament, that one's not a guaranteed win. The 7-10 matchup is a tough one. So, you know, don't be too hard on yourself here.
It's all right. You know, it was an honor just to be included.
Yep. You're just like my Texas basketball team. They lost in the first round of the Big 12 tournament too. So it's all good. My moment of joy, y'all know this. I love going to Galveston. I love going to Bolivar. And things might be getting a tad bit easier as TxDOT unveiled a new ferry, the Esperanza Hope Andrade. This is named after the chair of the Texas Transportation Commission and the first Latina Texas Secretary of State, Hope Andrade. And the boat was designed to limit the amount of engine noise and emissions, said Danny Perez, who is a friend of the show, a spokesperson for TxDOT's Houston office. The fleet now, from Galveston to Bolivar Port, has seven total ferries, but because some of the other ferries are a little bit older, this one will be subbing in and out. So on those busy summer days, there's not just two boats running. We got four or five running at the same time, hopefully, and people can get to Bolivar or to Galveston in a timely manner. And I love seeing this from TxDOT. I love that we are putting resources into that ferry system because the bridge will never be built. The dike looks like will never be built, Evan. Hey. But I am glad that they are focusing on this because I love going to Bolivar.
No, I think it is one of the unsung entertainments of Galveston is going on the ferry. My kids love it. You see dolphins. Mm-hmm. It's a real treat. And you can always just take it across, turn around, and take it back if you want to.
Yep, it's the best free ride in Texas. And this is the best podcast in Texas, all right? I'm throwing that up there as well. Evan, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun and have a great weekend.
See y'all next time.
That was Evan Mintz. You can read all the stories in our show notes. That will do it for this week here on CityCast Houston. Our producers are Carleon Jones and Joyce Tang. Our newsletter editor is Brooke Lewis, and the host is me, Raheel Ramzanali. Our music is by the band All the Kimonos. We'll be back on Monday with a look at how illegal dumping is impacting the city and what can be done. Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something new. On